Typical Mandarin.
Howdy, folks. This here is Phil DeLuca from Commanderin. Sometimes life just gets in the way of recording your favorite podcast. So this week, we've got a couple of segments for you. Neither Sean nor Nate could make this recording, so instead, we're taking a special recording that Ethan Fleischer made for us after Commander 2016 was released. In that episode, we had a bunch of unanswered questions from our Patroni, and Ethan was kind enough to take the time to record answers to all of them. Also, Vincent Truong, who I met while playing with the Command Zone meta, has a special system he uses to ensure that he doesn't waste any time while swapping cards in and out in an adaptation of the Staple Binder system. Now let's listen to Ethan answering your questions about Commander 2016.
Hi, this is Ethan Fleischer. I'm just coming back for one round to answer a few of the questions that were sent in for the previous episode that I was on. We didn't have time to get to those the first time, so I'm going to try to cover as many of them as I can, and so that you guys can get all of your questions answered. So a reminder, I'm the lead designer of Magic 2016. So some of the patron questions from the Patrones. Kyle Carson asks, were any of the cards specifically designed for someone on the team's deck? So I guess the word got out that Scourge of Nel'Toth from Commander 2015 was something designed specifically for my Grimgrin deck. This time, as far as I know, nobody managed to get in a card that was specifically for one of their pet decks, but it's certainly possible. Kyle also asks, if you could go back and change one thing, what would it be? I guess I would like to make some kind of change to the Ludovic card. I feel like the creative treatment and the mechanics weren't really what people were looking for in retrospect. So I would change that card in some way, either change the mechanic to better match the character, or ask somebody to reconcept the card as something else. You guys, all four in the show, are awesome. Best, Kyle C. Carson, avid Lorthos player. P.S. Deep Glow Skate is so good, it makes me sad. Well, I'm sorry you're sad about that, Kyle C. Carson, but I'm looking forward to playing with it myself, and if he gets out of control, then I'll probably just stop playing with him. All right, here's a question from another listener, Mr. Big Bents, a.k.a. at Bents Mister, a.k.a. Andrew Bentley, says, what deck is the development team thinking is going to be the most popular? I believe that the deck with Atraxa in it is probably slated to be the most popular. She's definitely the four-color commander that's attracted the most attention and excitement. And the deck is super sweet. That one was originally designed by Ali Medwin. And great +1/+1 counter theme deck. And then you can take Atraxa out and, as we discussed, do all kinds of crazy things with her. You can make an Infect deck or a Stax deck or a Planeswalker deck, or just some sort of crazy proliferate deck. So, yeah, she is by far the most popular thing going here. All right. Patron Russell Lee, at Rogue Artificer on Twitter, says, my question is about orcs. I had my hopes up that with Commander 2016, that there would be a finally suitable commander that would let me blend Sekuar Deathkeeper and Zergo Helm Smasher in orc tribal goodness. Yet, there's not a single orc, new or old, available. Sure, I could cobble something together with Saskia the Unyielding or a couple partner commanders, but it's not the same. Is there a moratorium on orcs in Magic, and we'll just have to make do with Tarkir until we go back? Or are orcs just a creature type that gathers dust until needed? Thanks, Russell Lee. So, Russell, orcs are definitely one of the less common creature types that we use in Magic. They are something that we will deploy as needed to give a plane the right feel. So Tarkir was a place where it felt like we wanted some powerful, brutish step warriors. And so orcs felt like a good place there. You know, maybe if we went back to Dominaria, we would see an orc or two, because there are orcs that live there. But yeah, they're definitely one of those things that early on in Magic, orcs kind of lost out in the popularity contest against goblins. Everybody really liked goblins. People were less excited about orcs, and so orcs kind of fell by the wayside. But we will definitely bring them back every once in a while. Patron Cameron Fowler says, I love the use of older characters and other characters that didn't get a card in their respective sets in the Commander products. What were some other characters that were on the list that didn't make the cut? Maybe an ancient tyrannical Theros ruling Archon? And was there ever a conversation about oracling and reprinting the Nephilim as legendary? So I'm going to cover the first thing first. I'm going to try to remember. What were some characters that we were thinking about? Jenric, the astronomer from Innistrad, was definitely something we talked about during design. Colfinor, the Red Yew, was one of them. Let's see what else. Oh, it's hard to remember. I wrote it all down, and then I lost the thing I wrote it down on. We actually talked about a couple of really interesting characters. One of them was Urza, the famous planeswalker, who was an artificer. We talked about him. We decided ultimately that if we were going to make an Urza card, we would want to do it in a bigger venue than, you know, this little pre-constructed ancillary product deck. So if we ever do Urza, we would want him to make a bigger splash than a small product like Commander 2016. Another one we talked about was Lord Windgrace. This was a planeswalker that was, one of Urza's nine titans during the invasion, and he heroically sacrificed himself during the mending. So I actually had my team, we divvied up a bunch of Magic novels, and we all did research on Lord Windgrace to discover whether he would be appropriate for this four-color product. And we looked into, like, what is Lord Windgrace's color identity? Like, what's his essence? And ultimately, we decided he didn't really match any of the four-color combinations. He was maybe a two-color card, maybe a three-color card. Four-color just didn't feel appropriate for him, so we opted not to use him. It's better to print the card the right way if we ever print it. Let's see. Oh, the Nephilim. Right. So as far as eroding the Nephilim goes, we have a policy that we don't do functional errata of that nature. And also, just like, this is ultimately the worst time to errata the Nephilim. This is the very time when we've given you actual four-color commanders. So trying to convert the Nephilim into legendary creatures at this time was just beside the point. Like, it was no longer necessary. Friend of the show, Bruce Richard. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for the chance to throw some questions for Ethan. Blah, blah, blah. Bruce is talking a lot. Did you design a card specifically for any of your commander decks? I seem to recall a bear deck. As I said earlier, I didn't design anything for any of my specific decks this time. I do have a bear deck. It has every single bear in Magic and every single card with a bear in the art. That is in the color identity of my commander, which is Surak Dragonclaw, the bear puncher himself. So there's one or two black cards and white cards that have bears in the art or are bears that I didn't put in, but everything else is in there. Haven't gotten anything new for my bear deck recently. Commanderin has a regular segment called the Watch List, where cards that appear broken or unfun in Commander are discussed. What would be a card that you would not create due to power issues or simply being unfun? Like a new card, I guess. Oh, man, it's hard to say. I feel like the card that just drives me nuts is Deadeye Navigator, so I would certainly not design a more efficient version of Deadeye Navigator, because that would just make my misery complete. The last two conspiracy sets have included mechanics designed to encourage attacking and move the game away from long stalemates. Is this a consideration with commander sets? It definitely is. The best strategy in a multiplayer Magic game is to not attack and just keep your guys back on defense and, you know, wait until everyone else kills each other. So We always time how long our playtest games are with these pre-constructed decks, and if things are bogging down, we will identify the source of the problem and eliminate it, or, you know, if necessary, add cards that make the game end faster. Many in the community were expecting hybrid costs or cards like the Khan's Legends as a way to get four-color commanders. I have read that these didn't work in testing. What were the problems? The biggest problem, we tried all kinds of different ways of doing this. The biggest problem, ultimately, was that the cards that were the easiest to design were the hardest to concept. And ultimately, you know, we want the cards to have a harmonious fusion of gameplay mechanics and art and name and concept. And so, you know, when we realized that this just was going to be this huge problem, we opted instead to put an extra cycle of partners into the product instead. How are the legends from the past flavor text or stories chosen? I understand Ludovic getting a card, but there never seemed any clamor to get a card for Bruce Tarl or Rayhan, for example. I mean, ultimately it's the call of the lead conceptor for the set, but, you know, they work in tandem with the designers and developers, so some of those cards, I decided I really wanted, like, Sidar Kondo. I was like, I want Sidar Kondo here. This guy's going to be cool. I don't understand why he doesn't have a card. We need to do this. And then some of them are just things that we think would be cool. I thought Bruce Tarl would be awesome. I was so excited about it. I have a real soft spot for old Bruce because he just has all these colorful insults, and he's kind of this running gag that we've had going in flavor text ever since Zendikar block. And so I was tickled to see Bruce Tarl. Some of these characters will appeal to some people, and some of them will appeal to others, and that's great. You know, everybody hopefully got something that they like out of it. Thanks for writing in, Bruce. All right, Daryl Bockett at The Casual Guy says, thanks again for including me in this, and sorry for the delay in getting back to you. Time zones. I've got a ton of questions, from the silly to the serious to the not really a question, but I'd love to hear you talk about this idea. All right. Idris is so interesting. Would it be possible to build an entire set or even block around no white? So we tried an experiment where we kind of had more of some color and fewer of another in a set called Torment back in the day. And it was a worthwhile experiment. I'm glad we did it. But ultimately, I believe it was a failure. Having Magic really depends on having five different colors and having them all equally represented in any set where you're going to be drafting. If things are out of whack there, it just messes up the whole draft, and nobody knows what anyone else is drafting, and it's very difficult. So I don't anticipate that we would do a set without white anytime in the near future. With so many amazing reprints in this set, which were the most controversial? I don't know. I don't know if there were controversial reprints in here or not. That might be a good question for Ben Hayes, the lead developer of the set. Nothing springs to mind, I'm afraid. For years, I've accepted the argument from Morrow that it's too hard to make four-color legends, so I didn't push. However, doesn't the richness of the five headliners, not to mention the focus of each precon deck, prove that there is plenty of design space for tight four-color legends? No, I don't believe so. The design space is very narrow. We found some good ones, but I would not want to try to make another cycle of pre-constructed decks. I don't think there are enough satisfying themes there, at least for Commander product. Some of the four-color groupings have more than one theme that you could do, but some of them have exactly one, I would say, satisfying Commander theme. So, no, I believe Mark Rosewater is correct that the design space is very small, and I think that in retrospect, we were probably insane to try this in the first place, but with a little extra time and a little extra effort, we were able to pull it off. But I don't think the the existence of these cards can be taken as evidence of anything other than we were able to find five card designs. Is there any chance you could evergreen some multiplayer mechanics, at least for multiplayer products? Undaunted seems like a fine candidate. I could imagine that at some point we find some multiplayer mechanic that just is so perfect that we put in all of our multiplayer products. I don't think Undaunted is necessarily that thing, but it could happen. Can we expect that it will take 3 more years to complete the Magus cycle? So this is Magus of the Wheel, Magus of the Will. These are magi that are based on instants and sorceries. I don't know what the future may bring. I know some of what the future may bring, but I certainly don't know everything. I would hope so. I would hope we would try to, but ultimately some of these mega cycles take a long time. So I can't promise anything, but it's an exciting thing to try. Marketing this as the four-color set raised expectations for four-color commanders. Do you worry that this expectation wasn't met with a set that is really about mixing and matching two-color commanders? As awesome as the partner mechanic is, it isn't quite what we were expecting. From a Johnny Melvin point of view, it may exceed expectations, but doesn't have quite the same appeal in Timmy Vortho's terms. Might it have been better to split partner and the true four-color into different products? Ultimately, I guess I don't think so. I felt like the space for true four-color cards was extremely narrow, and we gave it our best shot. We put a huge amount of effort into trying to make additional four-color commanders, and ultimately none of them were satisfactory. Some of them enabled themes that there just weren't enough cards for, or some of them just were bizarre and confusing and difficult to use. So I'm very happy with the partner mechanic. I think that it's useful to consider that not everybody is excited about four colors as a theme, and partners give a lot of other options to a lot of other players who might be like, four color, I never asked for that. I don't care about that. That's just box checking or whatever. Some people are very excited about it, and some people don't care about that. And, I feel like partners means that the product contains things that appeal to more people. So that is from Daryl Bockett. Thanks for the questions. All right, and finally, a question from co-host Nate Burgess at Mr. Plorg. Before this set, there was roughly a 20 to 50% chance per opponent that they would be playing a given color. Now, with this set, at least in the short term, as people are trying out these four-color commanders, we are now entering a period where there is roughly an 80% chance that an opponent is playing a given color, making cards that hate on a specific color more powerful in the immediate future, since they will affect 4 out of 5 of these four-color commanders. Ethan, what are your favorite cards that hate on specific colors? All right, well, I may have to turn in my badge as the blue color pie representative, but I my favorite color-hating cards are Red Elemental Blast, Pyroblast, and Jaya Ballard Task Mage. So these are all cards that counter blue spells or destroy blue permanents. Jaya Ballard was my favorite legendary creature for many years. I have a Jaya Ballard commander deck that I enjoy quite a lot, and I have to admit that there's something just delicious about these red counter spells, which red is not supposed to have counter spells. I just love a mono red like vintage deck or legacy deck that just main decks. Maybe it has Painter's Servant in it to turn everything blue, and just main decks a bunch of Red Elemental Blasts and just counters anything that comes across or destroys permanents, and it's so fun. So, because the blue mage never expects the red mage to have counter spells, and I always like that aspect of it. So, those are my favorite hate cards that hate on colors. That's all the time I have for questions tonight, but I'm glad I had a chance to answer a few more of these. And keep on commandering. I hope you enjoy Commander 2016.
Wow, thanks a lot for taking the time to answer all of our patron and listener questions. We also snuck a couple of friends of the show in there too, because I know that they always have really good questions for us. For what it's worth, we really enjoy Commander 2016. It's spurred brewing like no other set in recent memory. Thank you for all your hard work on it, and we look forward to talking to you again. In fact, next week, we'll be talking about Amon-Ket with you, Ethan. Now let's hear from Vincent about his staple system.
Hey, everybody. We're talking to Vincent Truong about his special system for using some staple cards in Magic without actually purchasing a copy of that card for every deck he plays that card in. Those of you who listen to Commander's Brew have already heard Andy and Sean talk about the system a little bit because they were the proponents of the staple binder system. So, Vincent, say hello to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
I met Vincent while playing a couple of games with Jimmy and Josh. He's a part of their regular meta. So, Vincent, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into Magic and anything else that's kind of funny and kind of crops up?
Sure. So, I started playing Magic in middle school because my friends introduced me, actually. The very first deck they lended to me was a white weenie deck. I did not go the route of Craig Wesco and stick to it, though. I explored and diversified my color options. But I learned pretty much in middle school, and I kept not playing, but I was aware of Magic pretty much throughout high school and throughout college, and I didn't really get back into it until after I graduated college.
Wow.
Yeah, so since then, since graduating college, I listened to podcasts like Command Zone, Commander's Brew, Commanderin, and kind of pretty much picked me up on the Commander, I guess you could call it. It's not a fad at this point, right? Commander's not
no.
a fad, no.
No, definitely not.
it's its own real format.
It certainly is. It's just not competitive, and so it doesn't attract the same level of attention from press and all the tournament coverage.
Yeah, but I got into Commander, and because of Commander, I've pretty much been fortunate enough to meet Jimmy and Josh. So that's kind of a funny story. I was at our local game store, and there was, I think, a tournament of some sort that Jimmy and Josh were playing in. And I had just started listening to the Command Zone podcast, so I was kind of aware of who they were, but not, you know, I hadn't really understood how important they were to the community just yet. And they had only released like a handful of episodes at that point. But I knew Jimmy from Video Game High School, so I was like, okay, I have to say hi, because he's in a Magic store right next to me. I might as well say hi. I said hi, and we got a picture. I still have that picture.
Cool.
but fortunate enough, GPLA was like the next week or two, something like that, very close. So I saw them again at GPLA, and I got to, you know, kind of just talk to them a little bit, got to hang out with them, watch them play some games, like while I was hovering over their shoulder. And I was just kind of asking them, oh, how can I get into Commander? Because I was listening to Command Zone, I was, you know, just trying to get into Commander at the time. And they recommended the pre-cons at the time were the monocolored ones. So I ended up buying a whole set of those. And I got to play Commander with my friends at the time, who, you know, they had played Magic, but they weren't as into Magic as I was, like, slowly becoming. So I started so I started talking to Jimmy and Josh through email, and they had kind of mentioned, oh, hey, if you wanted to hang out or if you wanted to play, you know, feel free to, you know, let us know. And I let them know, obviously. What other opportunity would I give up? Like, I would not give up this opportunity. So I said, yeah, let's play Magic. And I ended up just pretty much we drafted together for a little bit, and then once I finally built my own Commander decks, I started playing Commander.
Awesome.
Let's see. I met Phil through one of those Commander sessions, because I think... No, I'm not going to bring up the unnamed podcast, but at that around that time, that's kind of how I met Phil, through that connection between Jimmy and Josh and them, and we got to hang out a little bit and play a couple of games of Commander. And then since then, Phil and I have played pretty much whenever Jimmy and Josh need to put together a commander group, and they often contact Phil. I mean,
yeah.
It's pretty pretty seamless.
Yeah, I wish I could respond on shorter notice, but with my kids and all, and because of the way the podcast is, it dominates my life. I can't often respond right away, so unfortunately, I don't get to play with them as much as I would love to. I really would. And it was at one of those that we met. That's funny. When I came to their meta, right? I call it their meta, right? When I came to that, I was like, I figured just everybody had been playing with them for years. I didn't realize until just now that you only recently in the scheme of things met them.
Yeah, I would definitely say I'm definitely one of the more recent additions to the meta, I guess.
Huh. Wow.
In terms of year-wise, though, it's been, gosh, GPLA was when Cons came out, so, or the not the most recent GPLA, but the one before it.
Yeah,
so in terms of years, like, Cons came out, what, 3 years ago? 2 years ago now.
Yeah, I recall now. I was at that GP, and I was doing, Men on the Street kind of recordings for the other podcast I was part of. I think we played a couple of games there, and then most recently, we played just before Andy and I recorded the Commander Summit with Josh and Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
And you were using a monocolored black deck, right? A Gandhi deck, was
yes.
it?
Yeheni.
Yeheni, yeah.
Yes, Yeheni.
Brutal.
Well, I mean, when you have... Okay, Phil, you had Erebos out, so that's not really fair.
Yeah, I did unintentionally essentially turn your deck off.
Yeah. Well, at least the life gain part's in order to stay alive part.
Right, right. And I unintentionally shut Andy's deck off with because I was running Anafenza. I needed to get some miles under Anafenza, as it were.
Yeah, and Erebos turns out, good card. Difficult to remove in mono black.
Yeah, you're spending life for all sorts of things, and here I was saying, nope, no one gets life back.
Yeah, I think the only cards in mono black that could do it are Scour from Existence, and I think Unstable Solvent or something like that. Unstable Obelisk, sorry. It's from the pre-con.
Yeah, sorry about that. I still feel kind of bad.
Well, I mean, mono black needs some answers to artifacts and enchantments.
Well, there's that one where you can sacrifice a creature to destroy an artifact.
Oh, there is? Oh, okay. I have to definitely look into those.
I just stumbled on one I wasn't aware of. I have these stacks of cards. It's really kind of ugly. But I have these stacks of cards, and I was going through it, and I'm like, oh, this is why I put this aside. Thank you, old Phil.
I feel like I have that idea in mind that I'm just going to start buying cards and just putting them away, and I just never get around to doing it.
Well, that's probably smarter in the long run because I have a whole bunch of, you know, cards that I've bought. Some of them are genuine, like, 15-cent cards that I just picked up. And I'm like, oh, this will be good in Commander. And then I'll never find a use for it, right?
Well, then you just got to build more decks. That's the answer.
Yeah, but even still, I'd have to build at this point. I've realized I can build dozens of decks just from the stacks of cards immediately around where I sit. it's terrible. And this sort of brings us to your system, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have a system where you can save both a little bit of money and a little bit of deck-building time by putting aside the really valuable cards and yet still somehow including them in your decks. How do you do that?
Yeah, so...
Tell us a little bit about that.
When I started listening to Commander's Brew and Commanderin, because you all kind of talked about the staple binder system, you talked about sleeving all the cards in the same sleeve, so that way you could interchange cards between decks. Now, at this point, I had already bought different colored sleeves, so I didn't really think this was a possible solution for me. that was kind of the main initiative for me, to figure out some way to do a staple binder system without having to buy all the same sleeves, because I already had all the sleeves.
Yeah, when you have a bunch of different sleeves, it's kind of messy to do the staple binder system, because you're constantly then, you have to shift not only the cards from deck to deck, but then from sleeve to sleeve.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a pain. I've done this. It's a pain.
Yeah, so luckily around this time, okay, so around Shadows of Innistrad and Eldritch Moon, the checklist cards had been brought back. They needed them for the double face cards. And that was kind of the moment that kind of solidified it for me. I thought to myself, well, why can't I just use a checklist card for any other card? It doesn't have to be the one that is, you know, named on the checklist card itself. So after all the draft chaff, I would just look for checklist cards and say, oh, well, maybe I could just use this in place of a card that I want to put in my deck. Because if Wizards has already produced checklist cards, they're saying, oh, well, then we can use another card to represent another card. So I could be able to do that, too. That's the same thing I'm doing. So I took a checklist card. The very first one I think I chose was Oracle of Moldiah. I had an Oracle of Moldiah, and I was fortunate enough to be even playing, like, you know, dabbling around in Magic during Zendikar. So I opened up an Oracle of Moldiah, but I only had one.
Oh, lucky.
Yeah, so I wanted to use it across decks because, of course, I was building a lot of green decks, and green decks obviously want Oracle of Moldiah. So I had to check this card. I wrote Oracle of Moldiah on it, and I put it in the deck. And then I knew I needed some type of system in order to put, you know, keep the other cards safe, keep Oracle of Moldiah safe somehow. Top lures were pretty much the easiest thing I could think of. So I pretty much double sleeved the Oracle of Moldiah, put it in top loader. And I put it in I think it's the Ultra Pro boxes, the Ultra Pro flip boxes, but it doesn't matter. Because I basically put the Ultra Pro, the top loaders, into another box, so I have that ready to go. So I have all of my staple binder cards, essentially, in top loaders, in some type of deck box. That way, whenever I draw the checklist card, or you know it comes up in my hand, or I reveal it or something, I know that I can immediately find it in my top loaders.
That's really cool. And you write the name of the card on the checklist card. So you see the checklist card kind of as the signal, and then you look for the card that you are replacing.
Yep.
That you're essentially proxying with the checklist
exactly.
card.
Exactly. And I mean, it's not an official proxy, but I like to think of it as a Wizards allowed proxy because they made checklist cards, which means they're okay with this. And I kind of, in the spirit of Wizards, I wrote on the checklist card the name, the mana cost, as well as the type. So artifact, you know, if there are any subtypes, creatures, if there are any subtypes. That way I can know right away. Like if I had a tutor for it, for example, if I had a tutor for Sensei's Divining Top or a tutor for Oracle Moldiah, I can remember that just by reading the card instead of having to like constantly think in my mind, wait, what type is this? What creature type is this? You know, does it matter in the grand scheme of things? So,
well, that is so much better than the system I was using.
It wasn't so much that it's better, but it's just I had different sleeves.
No, believe me, even the last time we played, I think I switched decks at one point to I forget who. And as I was going through and I'm shuffled up and I look at my hand, I'm like, oh, I've got a proxy in here. And it's a decent proxy. It's one I printed out and I don't glue them to the card back, so I just make sure that there's a basic land behind them that's of the appropriate color because it's all thematic, unless I need it to stand out. And I'm like, oh, here's a proxy. And I always feel like I've got to make that caveat, that explanation, where I'm just like, yeah, well, I have the actual version. It's in one of these decks. I'll go get it when, you know, I'll go get it when the pace slows down a little bit. And that always feels a little bit cheap and stuff like that. And like it slows the game down and you have to call attention to it. And your system is just like checklist. It's this card. Boom. And then you put it down and it's like, oh, that is so much faster and better.
Well,
and there's no caveat. It's like, here it is. This is the, you know, and maybe you explain it once a night, but then you don't have to continue to explain it. It's really cool.
Well, that's the thing. Like I definitely wanted to figure out a way where I didn't have to keep shuffling the cards back. So figuring out a way to put the cards in one specific spot and just taking them out when I needed them was perfect. Mm-hmm. Because you're not always going to draw the staple card that you put in your decks. Like, you're not always going to draw Oracle Moldiah or Sensei Divining Top or Mana Crypt even. So if you don't draw it, effectively you didn't need to proxy it. So by having the checklist cards in there, it's like, oh, well, they'll never know. They'll never know that I had a checklist card in this spot because it didn't come up.
It's really convenient. And it's also a lot better than going out and, you know, putting $20 on every Oracle of Moldiah that you decide to put into a deck. Lately, we've been talking a lot about new players, and it's one of the one of the lures of Commander, which sometimes turns out to be false if you don't follow a system like this, is you don't have to spend a lot of money. You only need one copy of a card. And this really makes it easy to do that. I spent years, and in fact, like I said, I still have decks where I've got a proxy of like a Worldly Tutor in it because I'm not going to pay seven now. It's $8-$9 for a Worldly Tutor. And there's no reason to when you already own a Worldly Tutor and you can use your checklist system like this.
Yeah, and it's really cool for new players because it kind of falls in line with MTGO or MTGO. Like the idea that once you own a card, it can go into any deck that you want. It doesn't have to be physically moved. Like, I think that's kind of the funniest thing, that I have to physically take out a card and put it in another deck. It's such a weird thought process.
It really is, isn't it? Now, there's obvious reasons for it, and that's kind of in a tournament, you...
Oh, yeah.
You know, you really should have, if you're in a tournament, you should have the cards and every copy of the card. Like, a person who shows up to a modern tournament and, you know, has one copy of Lightning Bolt in a hard top and then a bunch of checklist cards or even outright proxies and says, look, this is my Lightning Bolt. That's kind of silly.
Oh, yeah.
And even in MTGO, if you're going to create a deck with four Lightning Bolts, you actually have to have four copies of Lightning Bolt. But our format doesn't require that, and it's dumb that we should impose it on ourselves. By doing it the way you do it, it's clear you own a copy of it. You're not, like, you know, proxying Underground Sea and trying to claim that, you know, it's in the shop or whatever. You have it right there, and that's worthwhile. Your staple system,
yes,
is the way we play Magic online. Commanderin has a group that chats on Facebook and organizes on Facebook and plays decks that they want to build in paper online first. So we have a playtest group. And the only real rules we have for that group are you have to own the card or you have to be testing a card that you intend to own. So you have the intent to own this thing. So there are no Imperial Seals in the you know, the meta.
Yeah.
There was one guy actually who brought in, like he had a deck that was composed of all of these hideous cards that were, you know, he had a Candelabra of Tawnos
stuff.
I remember that because he tutored for it with an Imperial Seal, and I was like, yeah, okay, you own these cards? So we had to explain to him how it worked. He never came back because he wasn't playing like that. So it's interesting to hear that you found a way to essentially physically represent that same system where you can use any card you own in a deck. And so what we do is we'll build, you know, I have one Mana Crypt. I got lucky enough to open it. And what we do now, what I can do is I can put that Mana Crypt in any one of the decks that I'm testing. Of course, I can't do that in real life. So what happens is I have to either staple bind it or make do with something close to it. And believe me, Basalt Monolith is not close to a Mana Crypt.
Well,
it has a few minor differences.
I've seen the life gain kill you. I mean, the life, yeah, life damage will kill you.
It really does. I've seen it kill other people. And I'm kind of fortunate that it didn't kill me. It damaged me, but it didn't kill me. But yeah, there's nothing like somebody who plops down a Mana Crypt, especially in real life, and you watch them take damage every turn for several turns in a row, and suddenly they're up to 15, 18 points of damage caused by a Mana Crypt, and it's like, yeah, that's killing you.
Yeah. You would think it wouldn't be that expensive for what? Well, no, I can't say that. Zero mana for a soul ring is pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'd still rather have a soul ring, but yeah. So it turns out free mana, big deal. Yeah, I like your system.
Thank you.
I wish I had known about it 3 years ago. That would have saved a lot of time and, frankly, embarrassment.
Well, I think the system is great because I know I saw some people post about how they were already doing this system. And I'm just glad to see that, you know, I may not have been the first person to come up with it, but I'm glad to see everybody else starting to think about it and starting to use it. My next step, personally, is to find foils and, you know, get the ink off of that and, you know, write or, like, try to draw something at least a little bit.
Oh.
So that way it's kind of more clear to me and to everyone else what this card is instead of using the checklist cards.
That's cool. That makes it really pop, especially if you're not collecting foil versions of every card and blinking your deck out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's nice because then people can say, oh, wow, like, you actually took the time out of it to, you know, make it easier for the rest of us to understand your proxy. Because sometimes when people have proxies, it's, say, just a scribbled word or phrase or, you know, and a lot of people are, I mean, to be honest, the aesthetics of it are not very nice. So it kind of forces people to think, oh, I don't really like your proxy system that much because it seems illegitimate. By making it, you know, very clear to them, they can read it clearly and I have the card ready to go. I feel like it just lends, like, credibility to my proxy system.
Yeah, and you're not hiding anything. And it's so much better, actually. I found, it was funny, I was going through lands the other day, and I found some basic lands from way back in the day, and it had land tax written on it. I'm like, oh, this is cute. So, are you going to be at Grand Prix Las Vegas?
I am certainly planning on going to Grand Prix Las Vegas.
Very good.
Probably Friday, Saturday, Sunday at this point, I think.
Oh, that's cool. So we will shuffle up, as it were.
Well, I mean, there's so much more to do because, what, Amonkhet will have been released at that point. Modern Masters 2017 is still popular. There's three GPs. I mean, there's probably going to be a lot of things to do besides Commander. But yes, we absolutely have to get some Commander play in.
My plan is to play some sealed Amonkhet. I love those side events. They, frankly, are cutthroat.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to do well in sealed.
What's great, I think, is that this set looks amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watched the pre-release, but this set looks great.
Yeah, it looks beautiful.
Oh, actually, they have Lightning Round sealed events, in case you didn't know. So you can build a deck and play, I think it's just one game. You play one game real quick, or one match, and that's the entire event. So if you wanted to, I think it's after like 5 p.m. or 6 p.m., they have Lightning Round sealed.
So basically, you just paying for the card.
Yes. I'm not saying it's the best way to spend your time, but if you wanted to open cards, I would definitely do it that way.
Oh, I don't have any problems having access to packs of cards I need to open. My wife reminded me just yesterday, she looked up at me and she said, really, it'll only be for an hour at lunch sometimes. And here we are, many dollars later, much, much time. The podcast is something we all sort of build our lives around. Like right now, my kids are downstairs, not playing online games, and the air conditioner is off.
Ah.
So not that we need it yet, but I've been recorded for a couple of years, and it gets hot out here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I used to play Magic during lunch periods, so it was always about, we have to finish our game and eat at the same time. It's not possible.
Yeah, I was at Disney at the time, and they were really kind of retentive about having a one-hour lunch. If you come in a little bit late, people sort of frowned. And so we would have to go get our games in, and it wasn't always Commander. What started me back in was some RTR League, right, Sealed League.
Nice.
That one little every 6 weeks, every time a new set is released, we buy six packs of cards and play, blossomed into this.
and the listeners thank you for it.
Ah, that's sweet of you. All right, Vincent, this has been wonderful, but we can't let you go without a couple more questions. Ordinarily, when we're getting to know a person, we ask these questions, but I was so excited about the topic, we just dove into it. Who is your favorite commander?
It's definitely going to have to be Rafik of the Many, but that's only because that was the very first commander deck I built. And I kind of got around into playing Magic around Shards of Alara.
Wow. Rafik of the Many. Wow. You must have made a lot of friends when you first started playing.
Well, I didn't not make friends.
That's good. That's better than most people get with their Rafik decks. I'm assuming that you got punched in the nose a couple of times, metaphorically speaking.
Well, it's funny because I knew that Rafik of the Many had the effect it had. I have an awareness of how people react to things, so yes, I tried building a second deck as quickly as possible.
Right. As a result, is Bant your favorite shard?
Bant is most definitely my favorite shard.
Nice. And what's your favorite guild?
Favorite guild is probably going to have to be probably Selesnya. I definitely agree that green-white tokens is a big oppressive strategy, and it's a lot of fun.
It really is a lot of fun. Hey, that new Parallel Lives is pretty good.
Well, I mean, if they keep printing enough doubling effects, I'm pretty sure people are just going to get really upset at some point. Well, I don't know. I'm trying to think of what else. Favorite color? I guess green, if I had to break it down. What other classifications are there in Magic at this point?
That's about it.
Yeah.
I go the same route. I'm green, Selesnya, but then I go Naya.
Ah, okay.
I need the fire!
I think when you play against other people that use blue, you start realizing, if I can't beat them, I guess I should join them.
You are in a blue heavy meta too, sir.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, for all Jimmy is Jimmy the Red, there's a lot of blue in most of his decks, and I think all of Josh's decks, so...
I'm pretty sure that if you ask any player, any older player or older established player, if they look back at the history of Magic, they're often going to say, yep, blue is definitely the best color. But if you cut people off and say, oh, only, you know, based it on the most recent blocks, I think you get a much varied answer.
Yeah, because blue does not dominate Standard.
Nope.
Well, it did for a little while, didn't it?
Well, I guess right now it is with the cats.
With the cats. That's Jeskai blue as opposed to Bant blue, which it was prior to the release of the Felidar kitty cat.
Yeah, that's true. It still needs other colors.
Yeah, more than ever. Vincent, how can people reach you?
So I'm on Twitter at V is for Vincent. And pretty much feel free to contact me there. I don't often show up on game nights, I guess, as recently.
Yeah, I meant to mention, you've done now several appearances on game nights,
haven't you? Two, I guess, is several.
Well, not really, but you're right. It's a couple.
Yep.
That's more than I've got.
Well, you know, it's only a matter of time, Phil. It's only a matter of time.
It's good to see you on there.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, Jimmy and Josh run a tight ship. Trust me. The amount of work that goes into making a game nights is staggering. So I just commend them for even being able to do once a month.
Mm-hmm. It's a tremendous amount of work. There is a reason you have not seen any Commander in games on YouTube.
You just need Jimmy and Josh. You need to hire Jimmy and Josh. Basically, I think if you gave them some money, I think they'd be okay with making some Commander in game.
Yeah, if they could fit that in. I mean, they've got a tight schedule too, so.
Well, at some point you have to have a Command Zone Commander in face-off, right? That has to be in the works.
Well, we're hoping for some time to play at GP Vegas. I mean, all three of the major Commander podcasts will be there, so. Command Zone, Commander's Brew, and then us.
That's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, people could, you know, have a real-life version of game nights. Now, it's not going to be heavily edited, so I can't promise that the game will be over in 40 minutes, like the show pretends.
I'm fairly certain there are some edits in there. I think you were there for this when we played a game at MTG Deals, where we were rushing to complete the game before a limited event kicked off. And so we were actually yelling at each other to finish the turn, and we got an entire game of Commander in with six people in 15 minutes.
Yeah, I remember that. That was kind of a quick-paced game.
That was insane.
You pretty much thought of your own turns while everybody else was taking their turns and just autopiloted.
Yeah, we had at one point two turns going.
Yep.
At the same time, and they were on opposite ends of the table, but we were able to do that as long as we didn't interfere with each other's work. And if you had something that was basically information-based, you had to go, hold on. That was crazy.
I mean, that's as close as we'll get to 40-minute games, probably.
Yeah. All right. Vincent, thank you for taking the time to come tonight. I know it's late. You were just at work, and so... here we are.
Well, thank you for having me. I can't wait to hear about, you know, all the listeners who are using this new staple binder system.
Yeah. So listeners, if you do start using this, or if you've been using this system, let us know. Tweet at us. We're, of course, at Commander and MTG, and now at V is for Vincent. And make sure to loop us both in so we can see.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks again for coming out that night, Vincent. I know it was a little bit late, you had just gotten home from work, and still you jumped on and you were a champ. May your eternal battle with crickets come to a conclusion in your favor soon. Well, that's our show, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us this week. It's obviously a little light on the other hosts, and we'll be bringing you more full-fledged Commander in Action next week when we talk to Ethan Fleischer about Amon Khett. In the meantime, please go to patreon.com/commanderinmtg and donate a buck a show. Even a buck a show helps us tremendously. We always find ourselves in need of new equipment or to pay for services such as web hosting and the like, so please head on over and donate. You will get plenty of gratitude, exactly like Shane Noland, Sasha Reimer, and Colin Ross Matias. Thank you so much for your donations. We could not do this without you.
Go Mandarin!